Ladies and gentlemen, let's take our seats. This is May 20th, 2019. Welcome to the Town Council meeting of Curry Beach, North Carolina. We'll start with the invocation and Pledge of Allegiance from Pastor Dan Keck.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. I've got this passage. It's from the Book of Romans, and it talks about how Paul talks about how each of us have gifts or abilities, and how they're all different. And I'm just going to kind of pick up, he goes through a whole bunch of them, but I'm going to pick up where he talks about gifts of leadership. We all have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is encouraging, let him encourage you. If it is a contributing to the needs of others, let him contribute generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. And I like that because it talks, so it does, it goes through a whole list of different gifts and abilities that we all have and how each of them need to work together. And how, you know, each of us, and as I look around and look at the council, you know, and the town leadership, you know, how each of you have different abilities, different gifts, and different resources that you manage and everything, and just, you know, and everyone who gets to be a part of something here. And how you're all different and unique, and it is certainly an honor, and it's a great privilege, you know, to have this in this community. So
thank you,
gracious God. Thank you for this night. Thank you for those who are gathered. Thank you for the leadership of this community, Lord. We pray that they would use their gifts of leadership and all the different ways that that they have, the different gifts that they and abilities to use in different ways that do so much for the betterment of this town. This we pray in your name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor Keck, as usual. Okay, commissioners, we move on now to the approval of the consent agenda items. Do I have any modifications to the consent agenda?
Make a motion we approve as presented.
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda passes. The adoption of the regular agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Discussion and consideration of persons to address council. Your Honor, Becky Blackmore.
Town Clerk, Mr. Canutis, Attorney, and those who are here. My name is Becky Blackmore. I live in Ocean Dunes. As of last Saturday, I'm the president of the Ocean Dunes Homeowners Association. I accepted that freely and voluntarily, so you may question my sanity, but that's what I'm doing. I'm also the town liaison for Ocean Dunes. I came to compliment several of your agencies. Is Jimmy here with Public Works?
He is.
Right here. Okay. He and I will talk in just a moment. But he had two situations recently that he addressed right away. We had a leak, a major leak, when a homeowner was putting in a pool across the way. Cut a line. Caused a major problem, turned off all the water to the buildings of Ocean Dunes, and those men that worked with Jimmy and down there with him stayed for hours into the night fixing that so that we can get a quarterback. We had a car fire, and the fire department was there and put that car fire out before it spread to any units or the woods. They got there quickly and they took care of it. And the police department was down there regularly, I would say. And somehow I seem to see them when they come, and they take care of matters quickly and efficiently and professionally. And I'm sure that's a reflection of the chief and what he has taught them and how he wants them. Also, I have to say, our inspector, Mr. Batson, we have issues where time is of the essence, and he comes down and takes care of the needs down there. So you all have a lot to be proud of with your employees. I have a simple request, and it may be that I can just talk to Jimmy and not have to bring it up to the council. I think it came from the council, though. We have new parking bumpers.
Yes.
At Ocean Dunes, down at one end, to bring cars in sort of parallel.
Yes.
And what we have seen happen is when the trucks, particularly the larger trucks, pull into those parking bumpers, the rear ends of their trucks are extending out into the bike lane, causing the bikes not to be able to go through their lane. And I know it's illegal to block the bike lane, but
yes,
they do it. And the owners sometimes cannot see to make those turns out of the driveways when those big trucks are parked in there. But I only bring that to you because I understand that came from you all. So mm-hmm. I'll be happy to work with whoever you direct me to talk to about that.
We should take a look at that. We can talk with police chief and Jimmy and take a look at what can be done down there. And I think you do have your new no parking signs.
We do, and Jimmy took care of that issue too. They put them all in. They left a good bit of space for cars to park. I called and talked to him about that, maybe Friday?
Yes, ma'am.
And he said, it'll be taken care of Monday. It was taken care of before I even left my house to hit the road this morning. He had it taken care of, they were moved. There is a good bit of space between those signs, and this weekend, I guess the police chief can tell you, cars were parked all in there. I think they don't know that those signs are there that tell them don't park between the signs.
Yeah.
Might need some more signs, or might need to face them out towards the cars, like the signs right there in front of the fork. Instead of facing inside, face outside. But we don't have to take up your time to deal with all that.
We'll think about that. Perhaps they require a few more tickets. Because when the sign says don't park between signs, if you can't see that other sign, it would maybe say you shouldn't park there anyway.
I'd say as a judge that you're probably right. Not
well, that, yeah, okay, that's right. We do have a judge here. So
you're a nice judge.
Yeah.
We're not as nice as you.
But I thank you for all that you do and how well the city performs, and look forward to working with you as your liaison.
Thank you. And by the way, police chief, the officers, the entire staff, Jimmy, Nancy, John, Nikki, we are pleased to have them all. And they do work for all of us. So thank you for your responsiveness.
Thank you.
Thanks. Special use permit application hearing. Get to my cheat sheet for this, please. Oh, thanks.
Yes, sir.
The special text amendment by addition of golf cart rentals, Chapter 19 Zoning, Article 3, Division 10, Section 243, Permitted Uses in B1, Chapter 19 Zoning, Application A, Section Codes 3, Chapter 19 Zoning App B. Request by Sheila and Dean Emler on behalf of the property owner, Sam Kadick, to grant a special use permit to the property located at 112 Fort Fisher Boulevard, South Kerry Beach, North Carolina, to operate a golf cart rental taxi cab service. At this point in time, I would like to swear in the witnesses. Anyone that is going to, any staff that will be testifying, the applicants, any opponents that wish to testify, will need to come forward now and be sworn in. Nancy? Do you have the Bible?
He gave it to
you. Oh.
I think Beth has it, right? Mary Mandy.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Keep me straight. Lord knows I need that. The special use process requires a quasi-judicial hearing. Therefore, any persons wishing to testify must be sworn in. All persons who signed up to speak or who want to present testimony, please step forward to be sworn in. So we have everyone. Please put your hand on the Bible. Do you and each of you solemnly swear the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Okay, thank you. First people to speak for hearing will be the staff presentation.
Thank you. My name is Craig Galbraith, and I'm chairman of the Kerry Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. Just want to say that this is an application we've been looking at for several months. The applicant has come to the Planning and Zoning Commission several times. We've gone through a number of the issues. Actually, we've heard a number of the issues presented today that we actually did talk about. And after working with the applicant, we sent it forward with our recommendation to the council to approve the application. We did have a number of stipulations or suggestions in terms of before the approval process, and I can just go through those. Some of them were already talked about right here. One is that the applicant shall designate parking spaces on the property for orderly parking of the golf carts when they're not in use. That was our first one. We did talk about the ingress and egress of traffic. The general feeling was that 3rd Street probably would be the safest, but we recognize that there's some property rights issues right there. So what we recommended is that the golf carts shall exit the property by a right turn only onto South Fort Fisher Boulevard. We also were concerned about the look of the building that would be placed there, and so we went through a number of different designs with the applicant, and we decided on one that was a little more attractive than some of the other ones. This is a temporary building that will be bolted down, I think, to the property. Again, I should point out that in the B1 district, we cannot regulate, there's no requirement or statement that we cannot have temporary buildings or trailers within the B1 district. So, this is an allowable building within the B1 district, but we did want to make sure through the special use permit that it was at least more attractive. So, formally, we asked for it to be limited to the C cabin illustrated in the premier advertising brochure, included with the material submitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission's review. And I believe that they did that during the last process. The next one was one that concerned me. I've covered being worked in a number of downtown districts and zoning, and this has to do with the lighting. We heard that they were going to have dusk to dawn lighting. And whenever you hear dusk to dawn lighting in a B1 district that has residential areas around it, that raises a big red flag because you don't want to have bright light shining into the neighbor's property. This is actually called visual trespass or lighting trespass. So the recommendation here is that we did not have a lighting plan brought to us, and so we pushed this forward to the council with the recommendation that prior to hearing on the application, it clearly described a lighting plan appropriate for the property's location, appropriateness, and the instance to be construed as lighting that is, one, shielded to prevent glare, is directed downward, and does not exceed a specified lumens, and does not exceed at the respective property lines 0.1 foot candles adjacent to commercial use and 0.05 foot candles adjacent to residential use. Again, this is to protect the neighbor residents from having light shining through the windows and so forth. And then the final one, which I don't have in front of me, was that there be a requirement that the insurance be allocated and identified to the town of Turtle Beach. And with those five recommendations, the Planning and Zoning Commission is recommending approval of the project.
Can you explain the insurance one, just so I understand?
Yeah, I don't have that one in front of me. That should be your E, I believe, in your
thank you.
Statement within your packet.
Okay. Sorry. I think the attorney's going to tell me I'm not supposed to do something. Did I do something wrong?
No, you didn't do anything wrong.
Okay. Cool.
Mr. Coleman, could you all discuss the public health and safety and all that?
I don't have that in front of me, the public health and safety. Again, I just have the first four of our stipulations. That's all I got printed off for me.
Okay.
So there might be two other ones or one other one that we have in our identification.
That's fine.
But there should be in the packet. And the insurance is a standard designation for any of these sort of things, where if there's a property, then the Tattakerry Beach is indemnified as well as being provided, I think, the $1 million coverage.
I just didn't understand what they're insuring against that would pay to the town of Cary Beach. It's not our property. So what's the insurance?
It'd be liability.
Liability insurance. Okay.
I think it's just to ensure that they have liability insurance for their business, not
just like a liability.
Well, that's what
he
said. That it was written to us, and I just don't understand
that,
why.
That part was written by our P&Z attorney, which is standard language. And again, I apologize for not having that.
That's fine.
Language in front of me.
So basically, a P&Z requirement was there's liability insurance on the business that pays to the town of Cary Beach.
Indemnification, there's liability insurance, and that again, I don't have the exact language in front of me, but it should be in the packet there. Cary Beach has provided, I believe, a $1 million protection for this.
Okay, I was just interested. Sorry, I didn't realize. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Craig. John?
I don't really have much to add to what Craig just said, other than we adhere to the letter of the ordinance, and Sheila and Dimblers have done their due diligence and provided anything and everything that I've asked for, including certificates of insurance and name the town. Certificate holder. That's actually mandated by Chapter 18 in our ordinance regarding taxi cabs. So, unless there's any other questions, I have nothing further.
Okay, John, thank you. The applicants.
We just want to thank everybody for their time and for letting us look at this opportunity. Like we had said, at Planning and Zoning and other times we got together, we're basically looking for a way to better serve this community. We see growth here. We're getting a lot more people calling, using the taxis and using the rental business, and we're just trying to serve it, the industry or the town down here in a safer, easier way. And we're willing to work for the town and whatever we need to do to make it happen for everybody.
Okay.
And one thing I would like to say, the insurance policy is this is what was required to be on the beach. We kind of know, informed y'all about this because that's what has to be done. But our thing too, with our growth and everything's going on, we're happy and we're fortunate to have a business and a business career. But we also are very involved in the community with the chamber, with Greg, donating golf carts to everybody's day, to the jazz festival, beach festival, a lot of the community things that we do, and we like. island men, island women. We got tents that we donate. So we try to give back to the community too, you know. And my biggest thing is that I'm glad that the neighbors came and explained their concerns, because now I know more that I can do to try to make this thing for everybody to work together during these 3 months with these tourists. It's not easy. If there's anything that needs to be addressed in the future with the neighbors, I'd be glad at one-on-one to see that it's done. We try to make these golf carts safe as possible. That's our main concern. And the main thing is because our liability and our insurance is on the line. So we don't want to rent out a golf cart to somebody comes smelling alcohol in their breath, you know, man, or whatever circumstances might be. We try to run a good, clean business. It's been successful for us. We appreciate everything Carolina Beach does, and we're hoping we can do the same thing here at Cary Beach.
Is there any opposition that would like to be sworn in? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, to close the hearing, we need a motion on the, just read it. We need a motion for the permitted use to add golf cart rentals to SIC code 7999. If you would look at the bottom.
Is there board discussion first?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Maybe we close the public and then discuss.
That's right. Okay. Here, number four.
Number four. Yeah. Oh. Two sheets. Okay. We'll close the public hearing. Okay. Board discussion on the topic.
Do we have the lighting plan, John? Did I miss that somewhere in our packet?
I received the lighting plan, yes, sir.
But you do have the lighting plan. It meets everything it's supposed to meet.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, 0.05 foot candles is almost nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know there's anyone in Cary Beach that you have 0.05 foot candles when you get behind a house, which means that I miss. Those lights must be really shielded on the outside, which is good. I think that's good for the people around there as well, because that probably is less than what it has right now. So I was just looking, John. So right now, looking in what we would change or add to, if you can pull it up, Mandy, all of the permitted usages right now. So I don't know how far down it is and all your stuff, but. Bus transfer station is one of them. Is Mandy there or Beth? There you go. So I can't read them all here, but the things that we're talking about changing right now for this, all of those other things, if someone would have came to you with any of these businesses right now, wouldn't have went through this process. They would have just got approved.
Only if there's an S in front of it.
And S would have gone through this process.
That's correct.
Because special use.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's what I want to make sure I understood. So if it doesn't have an S, it would have just been approved?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Let Craig go ahead.
Yeah, there's actually two issues before the council. One, mm-hmm. one is the applicant. And the applicant is coming under a special use permit for parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the discussion that we just had. There's a separate, which is a chapter 19, where we want to add parking, or we want to add golf cart rentals 7999 SIC code to chapter 19. But they're actually two separate mm-hmm. discussion points here.
They're separate.
And I think they got maybe a little bit confused in terms of the presentation.
Okay.
Yeah. I moved ahead Okay. I was following one sheet instead of the other sheet, so I moved ahead on that. So that it may seem confused. It's just me. The commissioners don't seem to be confused, so
okay. Well,
that could be typical, actually.
So this is our second, and again, the PNC's recommendation is for the second component to add 7999
right.
FAC
right.
code to SHOP 19.
Well, I didn't mean to jump ahead, but they're tied, at least in my mind, they're tied together. Maybe they're
one,
not.
One cleans up another.
That's right. But it,
plus the point is that it's only the fact that they're golf carts that we're talking about this.
Well, that's what I wanted to make sure.
And that was the point right? that he was making, I believe.
Yeah, exactly right. Right. Is that there's a lot of things that could have already happened on this property that would not have went through this process at all. It would have just went to the building inspector and then been approved and started building or started operating, right? So if you look back through the notes, this actually came to PNZ in February, so February the 2nd. And then council, if we read the notes, which I hope you guys are all doing, so that's when we became aware of it as well, just from the outside. I mean, I don't go to the PNZ meetings because I'm in Hickory, but I do read y'all's notes. I don't listen to yours like I do ours, but I do read your notes. And so it's just been 4 months, right, February? 3 months? 3 months, I guess. Okay.
And again, the reason we're reviewing this is if you look up parking lots up there under number 14, there's an S by it. And so it's a special use permit for the parking lot. But you're absolutely right. If it was hotels and motels, 7011, which does not have an S, it would be going through the process. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
So there were special conditions that you put on him as you have identified. The height of the structure, all the gravel, is that all part of the approval, or is that all things that he has just added?
Well, during the several times it came, we talked about flowers and landscaping and these sort of things. So the design through the application process has evolved over our discussion. When we actually pushed this forward to the council, we didn't have a lighting plan, so that was one of our issues. So what came to you is the revision through several months of talking plus the things that we didn't have in front of us because we did want to get that before council.
Okay. Now, Andy, I might need your help on this. The applicant has said he will do some things that have not been required by planning and zoning. Do we need to identify those?
Yes, you would, because that would
right?
be the special use permit. It's a condition that would be placed upon the special use permit.
Okay. So then we would need to identify that we expect the landscape plan, that we expect the gravel to keep down the dust.
Yeah, well, he's just asking. He wants to make sure we get it right
yeah.
so we don't do it wrong. So Craig's question is, during the discussion between citizens and the applicant, he committed some things that are not currently in the packet. And the mayor wants to know, can we add those in
yes,
during the discussion before we decide to approve it or not?
Yes, you can.
Because, I mean, they're just commitments right now, but if they get added in, then they're requirements. They're not commitments anymore, right?
Right.
So one of the issues that a number of citizens asked for was because of the dust that gravel happened in the driveway, which is, that's going to be 4,000 square foot of gravel for where you're parking, and then some sand where there's still a parking lot, and then a driveway, right? And we just want to make sure you're comfortable with that, because I think that's where the mayor's going is. If we add that, that's a requirement. You know, saying it is one thing, but now you'll be required to do it. You're still comfortable with that, correct?
Yeah, when I told the homeowner that I put a couple loads of crush and run in the entrance way.
Right, exactly right.
Right.
Not the whole parking lot. And I understand that, right? You're not renting the whole parking lot.
Only
we just
want
to make sure that as we add that, we have to add it properly. I think
right.
that's where you're going. Is that right?
That's exactly the point. I did not see them. We have concerned citizens who have bona fide concerns. We have what I think is a good business plan that can cut traffic in our town, provide a cab service, which we could, frankly, is pretty well lacking. To keep other cars and drivers who might be having more fun than they should off the street. They're electric. you're not polluting the air. I think there's a lot of upsides to this, but I want to make sure that these concerns are addressed as part of the conditions of any approval, if that's what this council determines.
So I guess that's number six, right? So are there other things from the board discretion that came up that you would add? So one is crushed gravel in the driveway. That's one. We're in the number six now.
Yeah, the planting plan, whatever you would call that.
They have that.
The real estate plan as in there.
There's also reference to signs.
Sorry, Craig?
The reference to signs. I think right turn only signs were signs.
I thought that came up.
Yeah, so left turn only out of on Third Avenue was the other one.
Right.
Just for the sign, right? I mean,
right.
Which is still a
for
good
the
idea.
Sign. I do think that the town needs to take a look at some of the concerns relative to the traffic, and if there's anything we can do, potentially opening the second exit that was where I believe we used to have the bus stop. Mike, we'll talk about that a little later to see if there's an option there to maybe help with the flow of traffic in the parking lot.
Yeah, I think, Mike, there were a couple of Third Avenue issues that some citizens brought up that I think Craig's going to get with you and them in the next week or two to look at. It's a pretty sticky wicket down there, but I think if there's some signage that could help out for people going down that dead end and then turning around, I think it's a pretty reasonable request. I don't know where you put the signs, the problem, I think. Maybe you guys will figure something good out.
Now, it is my understanding that your business model is actually to deliver your carts and pick up your carts. Now, certainly because that is a parking lot, and if people would like to pay Sam to park there and come over and get your carts, that's certainly something that could happen. But it doesn't seem quite logical. They'd have to get that back to their house. So, okay. Any other discussion points based on what you heard this evening?
So it sounded like two conditions that we're adding. One is gravel driveway to help out with the dust, and the other one was a left turn only lane on the Third Avenue.
Right.
A sign at your expense, which I'm sure Jimmy will tell you what our signs look like. Are there any others that we were proposing adding before we discuss?
For information, that's a right turn.
No. The right turn's on the Fort Fisher Boulevard. On the Third Avenue would be a left turn.
Only those who have.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, thank you, Nancy.
Right.
Keep us.
Okay.
So are those the only two?
I was trying to think through. We will take an action to review the traffic flow. We'll take an action to review opening the second entrance on that parking lot. What other ones?
Those are on council.
Those are on in addition to the four they have.
We had the ones that were in the packet.
Yes.
That's right.
And then these two additional ones. And
that's
if
right.
they're agreeable, that's all the conditions we're putting on them.
No other conditions. John, any conditions? Yeah. Alan?
No, I have no more. No, just the ones we've talked about.
Joe?
You're good.
David?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Make a motion to approve.
Well, do you agree with the staff findings and the conditions proposed? You do?
Yes.
Yes, you do. Okay. All right. So it's time to vote on that text amendment.
All right. Make a motion to approve the text amendment by the addition of golf carts to the sections herein above, described for zoning amendment by Planning and Zoning Commission and associated consistency statement 1901. Did
second.
I get it right, Andy? There you go.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion by council? All right. Then it's time to vote, gentlemen. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any against? Okay.
And then?
For the record, that's
yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear Nancy.
She asked if it was unanimous.
She asked for what?
If it was unanimous.
Yes, it was unanimous, Nancy. Sorry. Okay.
And then... Motion for approval, right?
Yep.
Motion to approve as the board finds that this application for a special use permit meets the four required conclusions.
Six now.
Oh. No, conclusions.
Yeah. Oh,
four
conclusions.
Required conclusions.
You're right.
Based on the findings of fact, including the staff summary zoning consistency statement.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Unanimous, Nancy. Okay. That will bring that portion to close. So we will take a look at citizens, those items you brought up, and get together with the police chief and the others and see what we can do to leave some additional concerns. Right now, you're approved. Discussion and consideration of committee business. Community Center Committee. No reps tonight. Marketing Committee. Debbie? Thank you. You can have that if you like.
Increase. So public relations and social media, again, just going up a little bit and with that, just by $1,200. Crest Scripts, we're not budgeting for any of that this year because we still have quite a bit in reserve from last year due to the hurricane. We didn't spend that money for Crest Scripts, so we have that to spend this year. Social media strategy, content, calendar postings, again, going up 10%. Social media content amplification, that means like boosting your posts on social media. That's going up again significantly because all the algorithms have changed, so you really need to boost your posts now in order for them to work. Influencer marketing campaigns, that's going up significantly too, from 2,100 to 11,000 for the very same reasons. You'll see there's a 31% increase in these budgets. Again, that's primarily due to moving the influencer campaign over to French West Lawn. Yes, dividing that between the two agencies. Okay, so Clean, the account management, that is going up, the budget is going up. They're spending a lot more time on managing these accounts because they're buying more media, they have to buy different things for different social media outlets. It's not as easy as it used to be, it just takes a lot more time. More types of ads, more types of creative that they need to do. Okay, so then the next part is online management. So the account management and all the line items in this, they're pretty much the same as you'll see. Really the only thing under online management that's changing is down towards the bottom, the social media aggregator licensing. That went up $1,000. Again, because they really felt like they needed to get a vendor that was going to provide a much more robust search function. The next line items, the fulfillment, those costs have gone down. The handling and service fees and the storage fees are now going to be handled by the TDA. So that's not going to be charged to individual communities. So that saves us $1,800. Images and video. We went down for the video cost this year because we do not have any new SkyNav updates needed. The photography, we went down by $1,000. We got a lot of photography last year pre-hurricane, so we don't need to up that this year. And visitors got image right $75. So that goes through it line item by line item. When it all adds up, we have a suggested budget of $269,390. Again, that's 11.7% increase from last year.
Debbie, all of this money is specific to Curie Beach. It's not part of a general area.
This is all Curie Beach.
This is all the Curie Beach portion, okay.
Yeah, this is very specific to Curie Beach.
All right.
And can you advance into the next slide? So this shows you the budget allocations in a graph format. You'll see that the preponderance of it, 8%, is spent on advertising and media services, actually, you know, paid services. And then online management is 7%. Fulfillment is really 0% because TDA is taking back a lot of that. Images and video, 3%, and contingency, 10%, holdback is 10%. So we do have a limited budget because we're a small community, but they're really making the most of it in terms of, you know, most of the money is actually getting spent on real services, not the management fees. And then on the next slide, it shows how the paid media is broken down. 64% is in paid media, 22% social media, and 14% in public relations. We had some very interesting discussions in our last marketing committee meeting about just marketing in general and ideas to really increase tourism responsibly and engagement. And what we're going to do as a next step, our next meeting is in August. We thought we'd kind of come up with just sort of five big ideas on how to foster more tourism and engagement and use that as a starting point and give that to council and let you think about it. Two things that did come up for discussion, just throwing this out there for just thinking. A couple of things that we thought as a committee would be very helpful to the community in terms of tourism is if there's any possibility to create the hours like Carolina Beach has done during the summer months to allow dogs on the beach after 5 and before 7 a.m. We feel like we're losing a lot of rental activity, VRBO, and so forth for people. Everyone travels with their dog these days, and it's also causing a great deal of confusion. That was one thing. I know that's a hot issue. The other thing was the extension of the bike path into Curie. That is another topic that we get a lot of questions about. You know, when are we going to extend it? Again, I know that that has been visited before, but now that that bike path is complete, we are wondering if the citizens might be ready to reconsider that.
You know, we should provide information to the committee on that. We really should.
I think
their path is 1.2. Ours would have to be 3.4. Our path would be over wetlands. It would require wooden materials. It's significantly more expensive on a much smaller population. But we are not doing a good job of sharing the information and why we haven't closed the idea, but why we are reluctant to approach it anytime soon.
Can I speak to that too? Can I speak to that also?
Oh, of course. Okay.
Yeah, Carolina Beach said, 1.2 miles?
Yeah.
And it's covered just, I think, $400,000 worth of it. If people got their way and we built it as long as everybody wanted down to the ferry, looking at over 3 miles, that'd be well over $1 million that would come out of the town's pocket. We would cross over wetlands, state park, the historic district. We'd have to go over the Dow remains, which would probably be an environmental impact study. We would go behind 48 people's homes along Settlers Lane. Those people might not want people crossing, riding their bikes 25 feet from the back of their deck, which I could definitely understand, if they're in their backyard. Passes 2 tennis courts, 2 pools. And in Carolina Beach, I think it only touches 5 to 10 homes, like it would touch 46 or 48 here in Curie Beach. So our issue is much more pronounced than Carolina Beach has. Plus, the farther south you get, the main dock for Motsu is directly behind our town home, which has gone from being dock 2 to the, I think the terminology changed in the Motsu meeting, Nancy, to the main dock. So that kind of tells you how they're thinking of it in the Motsu meetings. The farther south you get, the little more they restrict on what they allow uses. I think our argument at this point to extend that greenway is severely weakened at this point.
So. It sounds like how.
Yeah.
I wanted it on record because we do get quite a bit of questions about it. I want to make sure it was on record.
Yeah.
It would just not be just as easy as Carolina Beach had it. We have a lot more to deal with than they did.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just address it in a mayor note.
Okay.
Maybe I should just do that. I'll have to think about that.
Okay.
Thanks. But what else? You said there were 4? You hit 2. You hit 2 pretty hot ones. You said there were 4.
What else you got? No, this is just a general thing, though. We said that we thought it would be good to just brainstorm and come up with some ideas for council to respond to. Those were just 2 that were examples. We haven't even developed these ideas yet.
Okay. I mean, I think council is certainly open to any type of marketing ideas. We are unique, right? We have 300 mini motels. We don't have huge motels. And we do have a lot to offer that we can take advantage of. And I am pleased to note that we did use some of that rollover money to welcome back Wilmington or whatever the heck that was.
The comeback campaign.
Yes, the comeback campaign.
The comeback campaign was the first time that all of the communities that are promoted with these tourism dollars have worked collectively to pool the funds to do a joint campaign. And the impact of that campaign was astounding. And so the ability to really have a huge impact by cooperating on that campaign bore great fruit for all of us. And we're all hopeful that that might be something we may be able to do again someday.
The only beach that didn't, for good reasons, was Wrightsville, because they had significant damage. They were not ready for people to come back.
Right.
most of the major hotels were damaged. So, but beyond that, everybody was
a great opportunity. Well, yeah. One other quick thing is, this is just an FYI. The town's tagline, which is North Carolina's Small Wonder, it's been in place for about 10 years, and the creative folks are going to take a look at perhaps updating that and refreshing it. It may be time. That's within this budget, and so that's just something to kind of keep an eye out for.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of detail and data behind whatever comes up.
Yeah.
And does that come back to council if you do that, if you're changing the tagline?
As far as approving it?
Yes.
I don't know, technically, if you'd like it to. I'm sure we could.
I think it should.
Okay.
More for awareness. Yeah. Not like we're going to have more data to change.
And secondly, for the marketing team, can you just, as you guys are talking about ideas, consider whether they encourage people to come stay or day trippers? And
yes.
any marketing idea that's day trippers, you can pretty much write off after
and
this weekend.
We couldn't agree more, because okay. We're all about heads and beds.
Okay.
Well. Because we're all about increasing the room occupancy tax.
Right.
So yes,
exactly
right. That's a very good point, and that definitely rules how we think.
Good.
Can I ask a question,
yes.
Dick? Appreciate your charts there. On the dog issue real quick, a dog followed me onto the beach at our HOA a few weeks ago. And I told the lady and her husband and the three children that the dog was not allowed to go on the beach. And they said, well, sure he is.
Well, yeah, I don't know what gender the dog was.
And I said, no, it's not. If you are renting one of the homes in the HOA I'm in, because I don't recognize you, you can tie it over here on the deck, leading down to the beach. And they got into my kit a little bit regarding it was legal to have the dog. And they found this out by going on to bringyourpooch.com or bringyourfido.com. And I researched that after I went back to the house. And lo and behold, on that website, as you go down through the different locations along the Carolina coast, one of them is Fort Fisher. And it says dogs are allowed, which we know it is, but right under the big sign that says Fort Fisher, it goes Curie Beach, North Carolina, as the address. Then when you get to the one that is Curie Beach, it says no dog. So my question to you, you made the comment that people would be more likely to come to Curie Beach if they knew there was less dog restriction. Are we getting complaints from people that get here and then find out their dogs are not allowed?
I really don't have any real hard data. This is all hearsay. You know, people talk, people come up and say things to you all the time. And, I've gotten a lot of people say things to me about the dogs and the footage issue. And we were just thinking that for consistency's sake, and just the fact that so many people today really do travel with their dogs, and they treat them like family. And I do agree, believe me, as a dog owner, I think there's nothing worse than someone that doesn't pick up after their pet. And if y'all were ever to consider doing anything like that, I would hope that there would be an extraordinarily stiff fine for people who didn't clean up after their pet. But anyway, that was just an aside. Are there any questions about the budget? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clint. We need a motion to approve that budget.
We should probably do that. Motion to approve the budget.
I'll make a motion to approve the marketing budget.
I'll second.
Presented.
Any other comment? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Shoreline Access and Beach Protection, Dennis.
I'm Dennis Panicelli, Chairman of the Shoreline Access and Beach Protection Committee. We're just here requesting a budget approval for vests for the Beach Ambassadors. That program will be starting this summer. And we just would like the town to fund our designated vests, which will indicate that we are volunteers and supporting the town as volunteers. So these will be fishing light vests or photography vests with lots of pockets in them. They will be volunteer across the back, beach ambassador on the front on one side, the Cary Beach logo on the other side, and name tags. Relatively small investment for the town to have us on the beach educating visitors and visitors.
And you had money in the budget for this, correct?
We had money in the budget.
We received a motion to approve it.
Yeah. We actually have approved that program, gentlemen, so a motion to approve the vests.
I make a motion to authorize the purchase of 7 vests at $30 each for Ocean Life Project volunteers from committee budget for a total of $183.
Second.
Any other questions for Dennis? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just like to mention the program starts on June 9th and will be on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. At N Avenue Access.
Okay.
Residents, if you want, bring your children, your visitors, your friends. We will be conducting beach walks and educating with regard to sea life, beach safety, answering questions about town history, any other questions you might have about the beach. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for the committee. Planning and zoning.
Okay. Okay, Craig Albright, chairperson of the Planning and Zoning Commission. As you know, several months ago, we were charged by the council. I've got the charge that we were given to begin the process of developing an overlay district in the B1 district to maintain a village feel. Fairly broad, but you know, we've come back, and obviously we're trying to be very transparent. We've had kind of a public hearing. We've had a number of the local business people involved with that, you know, talking about the process. We've come back to the council and talked about the certificate of appropriateness process. We have done a lot of research, and I want to go through that, the research, and give you our recommendations and ask for a little bit of guidance at the present time to continue in this direction. So,
one thing before we get going on that, Craig, in your discussions with the local business owners, does this kind of reflect where they were?
Yes, the local business community was very supportive. Their primary concern had to do with, will this affect the interior of what they do and that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. obviously this is not an interior sort of thing in an exterior. When we explained the process, we really didn't have any complaints. In fact, if anything, you know, the folks that were there seemed to be fairly positive about it. And we've got a couple P&Z folks here that will, I think, affirm that also.
And it was really to ensure that new businesses coming into the area do not necessarily break the look and feel of the rest
right,
of the businesses.
Exactly. You know, I think everybody, in fact, you know, quite frankly, I think the comments that we had from the public in terms of the discussion a little bit earlier showed that there is concern about the B1 district and the village feel, and people moved here because of the community feel and these sort of things. So I think this is a very timely process that we're going through right now.
Okay.
So anyway, I want to come back to the council and bring you up to date with basically what our findings are at the present time. And I have to say, I think the council and as well as Mr. Eldridge, our attorney, have become quite expert on some of these issues, I think, over the last couple months. I'd be glad to answer any questions on this. But last time I talked about the certificate of appropriateness as a process by which you can kind of control the look and the feel, the architectural feel, the painting, and these type of things associated with a community. It turns out that to have, in the state of North Carolina, that in order to have a certificate of appropriateness type of process, you have to have a designation as a local historical district. And so as we've kind of put up here, the COA process, the certificate of appropriateness, is really the best way to manage the look and feel of an area that has some significance to the town. It's the easiest method to address architectural elements, materials, and one thing that's particular in the COA is the idea of compatibility with the local environment, with other buildings within the community.
If I can ask you, Craig, because you've piqued my interest with saying local historic district.
Yes, believe me, I'll come back to that.
Okay, because I don't know if local means something different, because historic district sets off some degree of alarms on what you can do.
I'm quite aware of that.
Okay, all right.
My PowerPoint will address some of those issues.
Thank you.
So the only other method is really through a special use permit. We just went through a special use permit process. You can see it's kind of cumbersome in terms of the process in the state of North Carolina. But there, you can regulate to some extent the look and the feel of a community through a special use permit. Not so much the design. You can regulate the signage. You can regulate landscaping. You can regulate usage, driveways, that sort of thing. But once you come down to kind of the look and feel of architectural component, an SUP process really doesn't work very well. So, certainly the COA process is really designed to capture the look and feel and to maintain or create a look and feel of a process. In North Carolina also, based upon some case law, some recent case law, is that the only way you can kind of manage the look and feel and architectural components related to residential properties, and this is for one or two unit residential properties, is through the COA process. You cannot do it through any other mechanism in the state of North Carolina right now. So based upon that, doing some more research, we found that the COA process must be tied to a local historic district designation. I should point out that this is oftentimes, maybe for the same reason that you're concerned about the alarm, this oftentimes is called the character preservation overlay district, character preservation. But technically, when you look at the ordinance, it's called the historic district. But a lot of people now refer to these as character preservation overlay districts because a lot of times, they're not really historic in nature. There's some culture component and that sort of thing. But I'll come to that in a second. So, what is kind of a local historic district? First of all, it doesn't need to be complicated. That kind of knee-jerk a lot of times when people hear a historic district, and you think about downtown Wilmington and so forth, is you think it's very complicated. There are literally hundreds of historic districts in the state of North Carolina. I just have some examples up here. Some are complicated. I mean, there's no question about it. Again, when you look at the regulations for downtown Wilmington, let's say, it's 70 to 100 pages long. There's a process that's very restrictive. But you have many, many communities that have very, very simple historic district type processes. For example, the city of Banner Elk, which has a population of about 1,000, their total regulations in their historic district, and again, they're trying to preserve the look of that mountain community right there, is only 6 pages long. I did take Wilmington. A lot of people don't realize, but actually there's 5 historic districts in the city of Wilmington, not just the downtown. There's one which is called Carolina Heights and the Winterco Terrace Historic District. And basically, this is simply defined as a well-landscaped area. It contains a variety of 20th century architectural styles. So this is a district where you have a lot of 1960s and 1970s and 1950s type of buildings. So again, when you think about a historic district, it doesn't mean they're 18th century or early 19th century type of thing. They'd be certainly 20th century. And I'll have a definition in the state of North Carolina about this. And as I already mentioned, COA regulations and looking at, I probably looked at about 50 or 60 of these right now. They range, again, very complicated, up to about maybe 100 pages, but you do find a lot of them that are 2 pages long, 4 pages long, simply to try to preserve the character of a particular district. Again, you have to have a historic district to have a COA type of process. COA design guidelines for commercial properties tend to focus on building exteriors. When you look at these, they tend to focus on materials, paint color, what the storefront might look like, some architectural features, what the roofs might look like, and in particular, compatibility with the surrounding areas. And again, these could be anywhere from 2 to to 6 pages long. I mean, they certainly don't have to be very complicated. I think last time I showed you one that was 2 pages long, the last time I was here. What we're recommending, and we did vote, and we had a long discussion on this, and this is our recommendation, but the recommendation of going in this direction also recognizes that we're looking for guidance from council, that we don't want to go down a certain path without this sort of direction. What I have up here is the zoning map for the town of Kerry Beach here. The boundaries I put on here are just for discussion example purposes only, just to give you an idea of what we're doing. Right here, we already have an overlay district, so Kerry Beach does have an overlay district. This is our mixed-use overlay district that goes down K Avenue. What we are recommending, what Planning and Zoning is recommending, is that the council allows us to push forward in this direction, is to identify an area, let's say in the central part of the B1 district, down here, maybe about two blocks, one block on either side of Fort Fisher, maybe about one block wide, that would be designated as a historic district. Now, my next slide will talk about the process of having it become a historic district. And then we have another overlay district with maybe more restrictive uses, not going through the COA process, but maybe a little bit more restrictive uses in terms of both sides of what that historic district is. And again, these boundaries are just simply for example purposes right now. Process to designate a historic district, again, this does not have to be complicated. This is the process that was put together by our attorney who did an investigation on there. I've highlighted in red, I think, the important issues right here. The historic district, to be a historic district, is defined as an areas of special significance in terms of history. And there's other things in there, you can see the dot, dot, dots. Architecture and or culture. And possesses integrity of design, setting, materials, feeling, and association. So again, it's not simply meaning that it has to be a 19th century or 18th century community and that sort of thing. That, again, when you look at a lot of these, quote, historic districts, and again, that's why they kind of don't call it historic districts so much anymore, but rather more of this preservation sort of thing. Many of these, like in Banner Elk, it's just preserving that kind of mountainous type of feel, particularly in Banner Elk. So the general feeling of planning and zoning is that there is a village community, at least in the...
Relative to that, Craig, just a quick question, because I'm getting a little lost in myself here. Thinking along lines, it's probably inaccurate. If you have a one-story structure down K, and you want to make it a two-story structure on from K to Atlantic, does this create problems to do that, or to maintain look and feel?
If it's within the historic district and we've established a COA, and I talked about this last time, you know, typically you put together a matrix and the different type of changes, so alterations, if it's minor, if it's major. Oh. Minor alterations could just be simply approved by the staff, by John, he would provide a certificate of appropriateness related to that. If it's a major thing, for example, going from a one-story to a two-story, they would have to go before the board, and I'll talk about the construct of the board in a second. To get a certificate of appropriateness. Now again, you could have only two or three pages, as long as they satisfy those two or three pages of what is appropriate, then that certificate of appropriateness would be issued and then they could go ahead and build that second story there. So again, right here, when you look at this, it can be an overlay district. Again, most historic districts are overlay districts as we were talking about right there. Some historic districts, again, when you look at downtown Wilmington, they have a separate historic board that looks at all these different things. Many of the smaller districts, the sort of things that we're looking at, actually designate the Planning and Zoning Commission as the historic district commission. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's what a lot of them do, like Banner Elk does that, and so forth. There's some requirements, at least three members have to have interest in, historic type of characteristics, but again, the PNC can be designated as a historic district, or again, if the council approves, you want to have a separate historic district or commission, you can certainly do that also. Kind of going down to the next red one down there, the historic district powers or commission powers include acting on proposals for alterations, demolitions, construction in the historic district, and as number 9 says, that's done through the certificate of appropriateness type of process. So it's a fairly standard way of managing the sort of things that we've talked about here. So our recommendation is basically to recommend that the council gives us some guidance in terms of how you want to have us approach this. Of course, we'll do anything that you would like us to do. But our recommendation, after having looked at a lot of these different things and considered many different things and listened to, conversations about why people moved here in the village and the community sense mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, is that we would recommend that there's a small area in the downtown area that we would recommend be designated as a historic district. The process of becoming designated as a historic district, you have to put together a report. The Planning and Zoning Commission could probably do that. Mr. Eldridge certainly looked at the process of doing that. It's not complicated. You simply have to make an argument why it's culturally significant and that sort of thing. It's presented to a state board. They approve it. If you don't hear back from them in a month, you're automatically a historic district, by the way. So it's a fairly straightforward type of process. Our recommendation is that in this small area that you ask, that we would continue to look forward to the historic district as a process of preserving the village character of the downtown community. And then outside that, maybe look at an overlay district with more specific uses. Again, you identify the uses that are currently allowed in the B1 district, and they're very, very broad. And maybe kind of look at limiting some of the uses and maybe some landscaping type of issues, related to that outside this general historic district.
So you're looking to define districts and then manage it all with COAs just relative to those specific types?
You only have a COA for the historic district.
You don't.
You can't have a COA outside the historic district. The historic district, if we have another overlay, just an overlay district, that would only be through the special use permit type of process. It wouldn't be a certificate of appropriateness. We wouldn't be looking to manage the architectural components or the feel, but you could manage the use. For example, you could limit the number of uses or put more S's by what those characters are and that sort of thing. So, the recommendation is from the kind of more architectural feel. It's a fairly narrow recommended area, which would be just in kind of that down the 2 or 3 block area right in the downtown area. That would be designated as a historic district or a preservation district again, and that the P&Z would be allowed to maybe push forward on that and start that application, put together the document required for that, and then outside that area maybe look at an overlay district that has a little more restrictive uses than what the current B1 district has.
Okay. So, I'm looking at your map, just a couple of questions. Why did you go outside of B1 on the north and south ends? Because it puts you in a bunch of
places. Several people on the Planning and Zoning Commission felt that there were businesses outside the B1 district that could possibly be converted into something that we may not want in this particular area. And so their feeling is that, because right now you have the underlying zoning. And when you look at the underlying zoning, for example, the B2 district right here in pink, and even some of the RA3 districts, there's a fair amount of uses that are allowed in those districts that there's a general feeling that we may want to kind of look a little more seriously at and see if we want to tighten those things.
Well, why wouldn't you do that with the whole zoning? Is that because the process is too hard?
Well, because you may not want to do that all the way down. The thing about an overlay district, it overlays on top of the existing zoning map. So right now, if we were to change, let's say, the B2 uses, that would affect all the way down to here, okay? If we were to change the uses for RA3, all the RA3s would then be under that new use category. And so there's a general feeling that just in this kind of downtown business area, some of which goes outside the B1 district. I mean, you do have businesses within the B2 district, and you do have some businesses in the RA3 district. Some hotels.
But in RA3, right, because they were pre-existing, but
exactly.
The RA3 and what's the one to the south, RA2?
There's RA3 both in south and north, and then this is a V2 right there.
Okay, well, first let's talk about RA3. A Wings or a Burger King could not go in RA3, right?
Probably not.
I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure John's shaking his head, so I think
he agrees with me. But there are certain types of businesses that would be allowed in RA3.
I know. And so this is why I'm asking the question. I mean, I'm comfortable with when you restrict. Well, I don't know that I am, actually, but I'm at least open to your discussion around B1. When you start going into the RA3, it's already restrictive. The businesses that you're worried about turning over there are pre-existing. They were pre the zoning, and so that's why they're there. When they turn over, just like the Sand Dunes Hotel, which was in RA3, when it turned over, it could not go to Burger King.
Right.
And my understanding of how we got this far down this path is there was some concern among, I don't know if it was council or P&Z or citizens, how we got here, actually. But however we got here, the concern, as I understand it, was chain businesses coming in to Curie Beach. That's my understanding, right? And so the
not only chain businesses, okay, so, but for example, right now, when there's no control over an architectural component, you could have somebody put a 35-foot pure glass building, let's say, which would change the nature of that village look. So it's not just a use, but it's also an architectural.
Okay, so then there's other issues that at least some people are more concerned than others, right? Right. People that don't own the property, maybe, but whoever. And so I'm a little uncomfortable with saying you're going outside of any zoning, right? I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying from my personal perspective, the zoning for RA2, B2 is a different issue, and I sort of understand, but I don't understand why you would cut it in half.
I just put this up for discussion.
Okay, that's why I want to understand where you guys are.
We're not hung
right?
up on this right here.
Right.
Okay, I mean, that certainly could go right there. You could do this type of thing right
Yeah, I'm just asking so I understand right what you guys talked about, right?
Right.
And so just my feedback or my comments to council or to P&Z is you should limit your – stay in the zones that you're concerned about.
Which would be the B1 and B2.
That's right. That's the first one. And then the second one is how do you perceive this impacting someone that wants to change their property, right? So if we do this and then now there's another level, does it change it from a week process to get a building inspector permit to 3 months or to 2 months or to 1 month? In other words, how responsive is this process to an individual that wants to upgrade their property now?
If the P&Z is designated as a historic district commission, it shouldn't change anything at all. I mean, they would come in, and if it satisfies the requirements that we put together in terms of our...
Well, right now, it doesn't have to go to P&Z, right? If they had permitted use. So I'm assuming John Batson can get... How long does it take you to do a permit for commercial property now, John?
Well, it depends on what it is.
Okay, if someone downtown was going to say, I want a three-story building down there, here's my plans, and it was within the rules of right now, what's on the record right now, how long does it take for them to get a permit?
It'd probably take a solid week and a half or so.
Okay. And so that's what I'm asking. How long does this process now take to the same person?
It wouldn't take anything longer. If they come in, they satisfy the COA requirements, the certificate of appropriateness would be given at that council meeting.
At your meeting, right? You have a separate
monthly
board.
Meeting. Yeah, we have monthly meetings. So,
but do you meet specially for this with your this whatever they call themselves, right? Because it's not really as a P&Z. You're meeting as a different board.
We could
right?
certainly do that. I hadn't thought of that, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we could certainly, if you want to designate the commission, or again, have a different commission.
Right. I just want to understand the change,
I mean,
right?
We meet with a required. Notice that's required, for this sort of thing, probably a 2 week notice or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to understand what the change is, right?
We fully recognize the interest in not adding any additional burden upon the business.
Right.
I mean, believe me. I mean, I'm a property owner. We talk, I have properties throughout Pleasure Island and California and places like that. So I very much appreciate the idea of trying to keep things under control. So nobody wants to make anything too restrictive.
Okay, I mean, those are my questions.
Gentlemen, I've had questions. David's had questions. Anybody else?
Outback P&Z, what they want to do.
Okay.
I don't really have any questions. I'd like to have more time to
think about it.
Think about it and look into the what's been presented. I understand what David's saying. I understand what you're trying to do, but tonight's the first time really seeing this. And,
we could pursue the more information about what a historic district would look like and come back to you next month, maybe with more information that would clarify this.
Well, so when we request to designate a historic district, does there have to be a public hearing before that goes up to Raleigh?
Here's the process right here.
I would think it does, right? Because while you would say it's not a taking of property,
you would clearly want to have a public hearing. Sure. Even if not allowed, obviously you'd want to have something.
Yeah. I think we should have a discussion about
a public hearing when we did the overlay district.
Here at J&C, the investigation and a report is established. The report is sent to the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources for analysis and recommendation. You can also submit the report to the Local Preservation Commission for recommendation, for example, the Federal Point Historic Preservation Society or something like that. So, you do put together a report. Obviously, we would have a public hearing related to this particular report. But there would be a report put together. You could hire an outside consultant to do this. We're pretty confident, I think the attorney's confident, that we're talking about such a fairly narrow type of situation the P&Z could handle this type of thing.
No, so my question is, for that designation, do parts C and D happen before the designation? So it looks like they do. So in 6, all this happens, and then it comes back to council. We have a public hearing. The state of North Carolina Natural Resources, Cultural Resources has said, yes, we think you can designate it. The local guys, Federal Point Historic Preservation Society, can or cannot if we want their recommendations. And then council, after a public hearing, would then designate it. It doesn't go to Raleigh and get designated. It's still the council.
It wouldn't go to Raleigh without the approval of council.
Okay.
And once the council approves it, it goes to Raleigh, they anoint it, then yes, you are a historic district. But the council obviously would approve this before it's sent to any of us.
Okay. I just want to understand.
And Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, but we need to make sure it's clear that we're not designating buildings as a historic structure as a district.
It's called a historic district, but...
But when you get designated buildings, that's a whole different...
Right, exactly. Okay,
correct.
Let's designate homes that made it through Hazel's to historic disabled.
Yeah. No.
So, again, for the guidance, if it's okay with
people
the council,
make
we'll
money.
Kind of push ahead on this and maybe find out more information and start looking to see what's required to actually put together a report, for this designation. Understand that the concern is that if we also are looking at just an overlay district, not to go into the RA3 district, but simply the remaining part of the B1 and possibly the B2 district for any additional sort of things.
Yeah. You all agree with that?
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
You all agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't we go ahead and do that then, Craig? Any time you can get us the information prior to the meeting so we can get our head around it?
I'm sure.
All right. So we can sit down and think about it a little bit and
come back
with intelligent questions.
We don't want to string this out too far, so again, we're trying to move quickly as possible
But I don't want you to spin your wheels either. So if you can, because we've discussed that and you've done a lot of work. You've looked at a variety of things for us, and I don't want to have you coasting, in different directions, right? So if you think you're kind of on the correct path here, I think. Give us a little more information on what that would be, and then we can
be glad to.
Good.
So
in
we'll,
a little
we'll
more
plan
detail.
On probably coming back to you next council meeting.
Yeah, that'll
with
be
more,
fine.
More additional information as we push this forward with your feedback from tonight.
Sure.
Okay.
Craig, I'd also like for you to officially recommend, as part of that process, your take on this committee. Are you recommending it be P&Z, or are you recommending it be one of us and one of you and one of the community members?
Sure. We'll come back with that recommendation also.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of good work going on down there, Craig. Thanks. Okay, discussion and consideration of department head business, administration.
How early could they be ready, do you know?
Sorry?
How early could they be ready?
Before?
Yeah, well, I'm just asking so I can record.
Whatever you want, we need to have them done by June.
Okay. But we have a council meeting on the 17th, so I won't be traveling.
Still at noon on the 17th?
That works for me.
Okay.
Is that enough time before the council meeting?
Is that enough
17th,
time?
Nancy? We started at noon?
Yes.
Make a motion we set department head evaluations for noon, June 17th.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 John Batson said he'd bring lunch that day for all of us.
Oh, lunch. Okay. I was thinking maybe a week. All right. Building Inspection Department, John?
I'm on the agenda next.
Oh, you're on the agenda later? That's right, you are. Finance Department. What you got, Arlen?
Everybody's favorite time of the year.
The budget?
Oh, budget.
Yeah, I know.
Basic information. One is just letting you know that it's in conformance with North Carolina general statutes, that it's also in conformance with the local government budget and fiscal control act. One requirement is that there needs to be a public hearing on the budget. I know we can talk about this at the end of the presentation, what's being proposed, that we spoke about earlier in the budget workshops was Monday, June 10th at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Once this budget proposal is accepted by council, copies will be available on the town's website and also in the town clerk's office for review by anyone that will review them. And then finally, we must have either a balanced budget or an interim budget. Has to be adopted before the budget. So what actually is included with the budget proposal, included in your agenda packet, there's an actual budget message, somewhat lengthy document, but it explains, it summarizes the budget, provides some of the key highlights, and then also identifies the significant differences between the proposed budget and the current year budget. The second item is the draft budget ordinance, so that's the actual document that adopted ordinance of the town that provides all the budget information. And then finally is the draft fee schedule, which includes all the fees and other charges for town services. Also, not included in your budget, in your agenda packet, is a detailed line item budget for every department, so anyone that would be interested in looking at that, that also is available. And I'll just also say, before we move on to the budget, that you know, this proposal is based on the February council retreat and then also the budget work sessions that we had during the month of April. So we'll take a look at what does our budget look like, our proposed budget for 2020. What I've identified is the seven individual funds that make up the town of Cary Beach, kind of in order of, I hate to say significance, but let's say in based on value, I guess. So the largest fund is the general fund. The proposal is just about $5.6 million. It's about a $280,000 change from the current year. Second fund is water and sewer fund at about $2.4 million. Stormwater fund at $335,000. Powell bill fund at $66,450. And I'll say before I continue on, I'll go into more detail on each one of these. Just gives the summary of all the different funds. Federal asset forfeiture fund of $50,000, each protection fund of $24,500, and the sewer expansion reserve fund at $17,420. So the grand total of all the funds is just about $8.5 million. So what I'll do is I'll go on and just kind of give some highlights fund by fund. So we'll start with the general fund. And some of the highlights are, one, there is a proposed tax increase of 1 cent, which would be approximately a 3% increase. That would give the carried interest rate 34 cents per $100 of property valuation. This budget also includes a cost of living adjustment of 2.8% for town employees, and also 1.5% merit increase pool. Also includes two new full-time employees, one in the police department and one in building inspection code enforcement department. Also includes capital expenditures of a little over $170,000. Debt service, which is payments for our loans, just about $717,000. Also includes an $18,000 transfer to the Beach Protection Fund, a contingency of $20,000, and then I'll just say in general this fund is about a little over 5% greater than the original 2019. So I'll kind of move on to the actual components of the general fund revenue. Kind of just initially focus on the three largest components, which are property taxes, sales. So property taxes represents about 55% of the revenue for this fund. Sales tax at about 17%. And then garbage, trash, and recycling fees is about 9%. So those three components are about 82%, 81% or so of the general fund revenue. In regard to property taxes, which is our single largest revenue source, it's kind of hard to see the what's written there in regard to dollars, but the budget is a little over $3 million, and that includes both the current year and any prior year collections. And that's all based on a estimated tax base that we get from New Hanover County Tax Department. So the estimated tax base for Cary Beach at this point in time is about a little over $903 million. And that would be about a $12 million increase over the prior fiscal year. New Hanover County also does our tax collections for us, and the collection rate is running at about 99%. So that also factors into the revenue calculation. So as I said before, there'd be it includes a 1 cent property tax increase. I'll talk a little bit of more when we talk about expenses, why that increase is necessary. Also, in just a minute, I'll show you an example, I guess, how it would impact a property in Cary Beach. Most of the other categories on here are self-explanatory. There is a category on there called other revenue, which is made up of things like the distribution we get from ABC, the liquor store sales, motor vehicle tax, so beer and wine tax, and interest income. So that's the major components of that other revenue. And then the other financing sources, that's actually loans that we take for whether it's buying typically equipment or vehicles. I don't know if anyone had any questions on the general fund revenue. So what I thought I would show is just, you know, what would this tax increase look like at a home value or a property value at $350,000? So at the current rate, 33 cents, the tax would be $1,155. So of course, if you want a $350,000 property, a 1 cent increase would be an additional $35 a year, or you know, approximately $3 a month. Bring the new tax at $1,190. I'll just add one more component to this, which is we heard that fairly recently that New Hanover County is looking at keeping their tax rate the same as the current year. So if we factor that into the equation, on the left side we see the Huron Beach and New Hanover County taxes at the current rate. So we have the grand total tax of $3,097.50. I will highlight or point out that out of the total property tax bill, you know, New Hanover County is the more significant portion of your property taxes. You're currently about just about 63% of your property tax. On the right side, you see what the proposal would be that we just spoke about for 2020, with Huron Beach increasing by 1 cent and New Hanover County staying the same as the current year. So we see the grand total, again, would be an increase of $35, which is the Huron Beach tax, but when you look at your total property tax bill, it would be just a little bit over a 1% tax increase. I'm not sure if anyone has any questions regarding tax. I thought next I would just show for the general fund revenue, percentage of revenue, and I covered 3 years. There's the actual for 2018, what's estimated for this current year, and then the budget for 2020. And you do see, you know, some fluctuation, see the effect of the proposed tax increase for 2020, but the largest fluctuations are to the far right, other revenue and other financing. And in particular, other revenue for this current year we're in right now is much higher because of Canva grant that we received for beach access paving. And then even more significantly is the reimbursements we've received from FEMA for hurricane floods. But more so to come. And then finally, other revenue, other financing sources is loans we would take for capital purchases. And that can vary significantly year to year. So, are there any questions regarding general fund revenue? Okay, we'll move on to general fund expenses. Here again shows the various components of the general fund, the various departments and or functions. If we look at the top five largest, our police department at 29%, streets and sanitation at 16%, fire department at 14%, our loan payments or debt service at 13%, and then administration at 10%. So those five functions represent about 82%, or about $4.6 million in the general fund. You also see a category on there called other. The major components there, or the largest ones, are tax collection fees that were paid to New Hanover County, community center operating costs, and committee expenses, and then a transfer to the Beach Protection Fund, make up the majority of that number. Also included there is a contingency of $20,000. That's kind of a, just a placeholder within the budget in case an unbudgeted item comes up during the course of the year, or some will be available. I just make a couple comments too about the general fund budget. I mean, one, this covers a significant number of town functions, everything from public safety to garbage and trash pickup, just general maintenance, town upkeep, building inspection and code enforcement, parks and recreation, and then just general administration and just overall town operations. So very, very significant part of the town is represented through the general fund. I mentioned before the addition of two full-time positions, one is within the police department, another police officer, really becomes necessary because of the increases in year-round population and the increase in tourism. The other position is within building inspection, code enforcement department, and I guess from way back that department was staffed with two people. I guess for the last, I'm not sure how many years, it's been staffed by one person. And as John put at one of our meetings, that it really allows the town to go from a proactive code enforcement to proactive rather than reactive code enforcement by having an additional person. Now, the reason for some of the increases in this budget are just general price increases. They cost supplies, materials, services. Sometimes we know nothing gets cheaper. Also, I previously mentioned the cost of living adjustment and a merit increase. Those two items also impact this budget. Under you also see a category called governing body, which is really the budget for town council. And as part of their budget, there's some contributions made to outside organizations. The outside organizations submit an application that's reviewed and considered by staff and council. So for 2020, included in the council budget is $9,800 to the Pleasure Island Chamber of Commerce for the concert series, $1,500 to the Health Center of Federal Point, $1,500 to the Federal Point Historic Preservation Society, $1,500 to Fort Friends of Fort Fisher, and $1,200 to the Island Buildings. Another fairly significant expense here that I mentioned was in the top five is our debt service. So that includes existing payment on existing loans for things like the oceanfront park, land, vehicles, equipment, and this building, and the new fire station. And as we see there, that represents about 13% of the general fund budget. Also included in this budget is capital expenditures, and those are items which have a useful life of two or more years and cost to $5,000 or more. So some of those items are replacement of a police vehicle. Also, an issue that arose after debriefing after Hurricane Florence was the need for a town fuel source. So this includes $110,000 for a fuel tank for the town. And then also another $25,000 for replacement of miscellaneous textbook equipment. But it also includes the transfer of $18,000 to the Teacher Protection Fund, and I'll talk about that in just a little bit. And then I'll just say, in general, the portion of this budget that represents operating expenses, so I consider that anything except for capital expenditures, debt service, contingency, and transfer to have increased by about 6.5%. Any questions on the budget side? So what I'll do then is just a little busy, a lot of information here, but this also shows the percentage of each department of the total budget for each year. You do see a little more fluctuation departments, and a lot of that really relates to the amount of capital expenditures per year. For example, you see police looks much higher for 2020. That's because the town fuel tank that I mentioned, we needed to put it into the department budget. We selected to put it into the police department budget, so that increased their percentage for the upcoming year. And then things like streets and sanitation for the current year, 2019, they had purchased a dump truck and a street sweeper. So that's another item that drove that expense up a little bit. Their expenses up a little bit. Excuse me. Other expenses are a little higher in 2019 due to the previously mentioned beach access paving. So those projects were included in that category. And then transfers to other funds. In fiscal year 2018, there was a transfer from the general fund to the capital project fund for this project here for the town hall and fire station. Since that point in time, it's only been transfers to the beach protection fund. So that, in summary, is the general fund. Any questions before I move on to the next one? Okay, so we'll move on to the Water and Sewer Fund. Some of the highlights, one, there are some proposed changes to the existing rate structure that cover all customer types, so residential, commercial, and jurisdiction. and I will go through these in a little more detail, but in summary, one is to, one first part is to lower the minimum gallons from 2,500 to 2,000, and then a 10% increase to the usage-based rate tiers for any use above the minimum number of gallons. Water and sewer budget also includes just about $203,000 for infrastructure projects and equipment, capital equipment purchases. This fund also has debt service that's a little bit over $426,000. And that overall, this budget is actually up slightly more than 10% from the current year. So we'll take a closer look at some of the revenue components for the water and sewer fund. As we would expect, the major revenue sources are water and sewer charges that have been all of us pay each month. And that represents about 91% of the fund's revenue. Also, some of the other things I believe are self-explanatory. Tap and connection fees are all based on building activity, estimated building activity. Other revenue, major components there, things like account pass-through fees, new account setup fees, and interest income. And then finally, other financing sources represent loans for capital purchases. In this case, it's to purchase a new telemetry system for the, it's really for the water towers, the well houses. So I thought next I would just kind of walk through the changes to the rate structure for water and sewer. And really starting with why is it necessary? I mean, this fund is what's considered an enterprise fund, so it needs to be operated just like a business would operate. So not that it's necessarily to make a profit, but it's to cover your operating costs, plus have money available for future capital needs. So with that in mind, we'll take a look at it. Initially, I thought it would be useful to throw up what is it? Typical year look like in regard to water usage. And what makes us a little bit unique is the fact that the bulk of our customer base is residential. We really have very little commercial, and then another category that we call out of jurisdiction, which is really some of the customers that we supply services to in Fort Fisher. So as you see, residential represents 85% of the water usage of the town. So I'll kind of step through what the changes are for a residential customer. One, we want to continue to ensure that there's increased financial responsibility for those who use the most water and sewer services. So the first step is to reduce the minimum gallons from 2,500 to 2,000. Looking at history, the estimate is that about an additional 120 accounts, or about 6% of the monthly billings, will now exceed the monthly minimum. The next part of the proposal is to increase the rate-based tiers, usage-based tiers by 10%. The estimate here is that between the actions in 2 and 3, that approximately 51% of the annual billing will be impacted in some way.
So, Ron, just to add that, so Council, when we were at the Water and Sewer Authority meeting with Carolina Beach, we communicated that to Carolina Beach. This is still an issue that I appreciate Council for supporting the Public Works Department in highlighting the fact that our aquifer is under strain and we should continue to address that. Arlen will tell you we reduced water usage last year. I think it might have been the rain, but whatever. And that's a good thing, but we're not the only user of the aquifer. So we're continuing to communicate with Carolina Beach about the issue. Their water structure is nowhere like ours. They do not really punish heavy users at this point, and I'm encouraging them to consider that. So, but I appreciate Council for being forward-looking on this issue.
So the table here shows the current and proposed rates for water and sewer for a residential customer. Anything in red is a proposed change. So you see the lowering the minimum gallons to 2,000, and then also increasing each rate tier by 10% in the both water and sewer. And I will just comment that if a residential customer uses less than 2,000 gallons in a month, they'll have no change to the bill at all. And I had noted on the previous slide that the changes would affect 51% of the annual billings, so that means that 49% of the annual billings will have no change to their bill. So I thought it would be helpful just to show a couple examples of what it would look like. But I just selected four different usage levels, the first one being 2,500 gallons of usage. So what would this change do? It would actually increase this person's monthly bill by $5.67, or a little over 15%. At usage of 5,000 gallons, you see a increase for the month of $8.24, or about 13.1%. And the percentage keeps coming down a little bit because of the change in the minimum gallons. So the more you use, that the actual percentage increase is going to be a little bit smaller.
This year.
Correct. At usage of 12,000 gallons, get an $18 increase, or about 11.2%. And then at usage of 18,000 gallons, you see an increase of 31.94, or about 10.7%. And probably many of you would say, like, well, who would use 18,000 gallons in a month? Well, we have a lot of people that use well more than that. On average, there's about 115 accounts per month that use over 12,000 gallons, and of those 115 accounts, the average is about 23,000 gallons a month. So we do have some heavy water users that will definitely see, you know, increases, based on their usage. So does anyone have any questions about residential customers? I'll go through this a little quicker, commercial and out of jurisdiction, because basically they follow the same pattern, which is to reduce the minimum gallons to 2,000 and to increase each rate tier by 10%. So this would be for commercial customers. So you can see what the proposed rate structure could be there. And I gave two examples for air usage at 20,000 gallons. So the commercial customer would see an increase of about $32.35, or about 11%. And we have some somewhat large users, especially during the tourist season. So a usage of 118,000 gallons would be a monthly increase of a little over $187, or about 10.2%. So that would be the impact on the commercial customer. Then our out-of-jurisdiction customers, again, same concept, reduce minimum gallons, increase the rate tiers by 10%. The rate tiers are already higher than both residential and commercial customers, of course, so increasing those tiers by 10%. And two examples there. So again, a wide range of usage by these customers, so 20,000 gallons would be an increase of $41.40. About 11%. We have some fairly significant users, so let's say at 400,000 gallons in a month, we see a $873 increase for the month, or about 10%. So, any questions on any of the proposed rate changes?
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Sure.
Ocean Dunes, large complex, where do we fall? Are we residential or commercial?
We're residential.
Do you have an estimate of how many gallons we use?
I could get that, I mean, right off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, so you might want to talk to your board and then talk to Arlen about how your billing is. It's an interesting mix. So you pay all your minimums first, and I think you have multiple meters as well. So if you really are interested, your board has a lot of information, and if they can't satisfy you, then come talk to Arlen.
Thank you.
We've been through it with your association a few times, actually.
So I just thought I'd continue on with Water Sewer Revenue, just a couple items just to show a comparison for a three-year period, including the proposed budget for 2020. For Water Sewer Charges, you see the impact of the proposed rate structure changes that we just spoke about. Tap and connection and cutoff fees have been fairly consistent. Other revenue and higher in this current year because of reimbursements we received from FEMA related to Hurricane Florence. And then other financing, which are loans, capital projects, and we just vary depending on the are there any other questions on Water and Sewer revenue? Water and Sewer expenses. As we would expect to see here, the bulk of the expenses related to Water and Sewer operations, that's the way we want to see it. They represent about 76% of the budget. Administration is 13%, finance 9%, and legal and government body is are about 1% each. Couple comments just on Water and Sewer funds. I mean, again, the operating expenses are up about 5.5% for the current year. As I mentioned, for the general fund related to the employee compensation actions that we talked about earlier, in addition to just general price increases for material supplies and services. One of the other increases for the year is our debt service. Estimated at a little over $426,000. One of the reasons is we will be starting a project soon. It's to replace all the water meters throughout the town in addition to installing an automatic meter reading system. We have a proposal for a loan of approximately $1.4 million to do that project, and that's one of the costs that's driving up the loan payments or debt service for the next fiscal year. So this chart shows the comparison over the three-year period as it did with the other funds. And again, you see most funds departments are fairly consistent. Water and sewer operations, a little bit higher for 2020 due to increased maintenance costs and capital expenditures. And also the net service payments that I spoke about before in the operations. Any other questions on Water and Sewer Fund? Okay, we'll move on to the Stormwater Fund. No proposed changes to the existing stormwater fees. This fund has net payments of $125,650. Budget includes about $29,500 for infrastructure projects. And this fund is actually down in comparison to this current year. It's down about 6.5%.
And Council, we'll come back and readdress this after we do the stormwater assessment we're talking about. So the budget, I've talked with Arlon, it has the money to do the assessment, we believe, once we get quotes. But after that, once the assessment comes back in, then council will have to review that.
Sure.
So what this shows is the revenue for the stormwater fund, much simpler fund, really only three components. The largest portion being the monthly stormwater fees that everybody pays. Max at about 30% is the stormwater building fee, so based on that building activity within the town. And then the last component is interest income on the funding expenses. So this just shows the comparison of those revenue sources. I mean, as you see, the major revenue sources, which is the stormwater fees, have been very consistent. It's been the same for a number of years. Stormwater building fees have actually been very consistent over a three-year period. The biggest differences relate to hurricane reimbursements. In 2018, we received the final reimbursements related to Hurricane Matthew. And then for 2019, we received from Hurricane Florence. And then finally, other financing sources, again, dependent on the amount of capital expenditure in any given year. Any question on stormwater fund revenue? We'll move on to stormwater expenses. Operating expenses are about 54% of the budget. Debt service is about 37%, and capital expenditures are about 9% of the budget. Been fairly consistent with most years, except for capital expenditures, which we'll see on this slide. In regard to operations, you see that this current year that we're in now is much higher than normal. That all relates to the hurricane and the amount of extra maintenance that had to be done, repairs to the stormwater outfalls on the beach. So there was a lot of damage to stormwater infrastructure as a result of that storm. Also, operations for 2020, we're just projecting, working with Jimmy, that there's going to be greater maintenance costs, ongoing maintenance costs for the stormwater system. Capital outlay, much higher in 2018, a very significant project in the Erie and Fielding area. And then for the current fiscal year, there was the part of the purchase of a street sweeper was kind of split between two funds, and then also there's a project underway right now in the southern part of town for improving the infrastructure. So is there any questions on stormwater expenses? And then I'm almost at the end, so the last four funds, I'll just kind of very briefly go over the smaller funds. Pal bill funds, that's really money we get from the state or the Department of Transportation, can only be used for street-related repairs, maintenance. It has to be streets that the town owns. It can't be the state-owned streets that run through town. So it's a allocation from the state, so it kind of, it's been about the same amount for the last 10 years. It also includes some interest income on fund investments. The Beach Protection Fund was a fund that was set up by about 5 or 6 years ago. Really, it was set up because we were concerned about funding for beach nourishment. It can also be used for other beach-related items, whether it be beach access repairs, beach signage, it depends. But the main reason was for potential beach nourishment costs. That's comprised of an $18,000 transfer from the general fund and then the balance of $6,500 of fund investments. The next fund is Federal Asset Forfeiture Fund. That also, again, is very restricted funds that, based on work that the police department does with certain federal agencies, we share in, forfeited assets, and it's based on the amount of service or the amount of participation that the town provides. That's budgeted at $50,000 for the upcoming year. And the last fund is the Sewer Expansion Reserve Fund. As it states, it's for future expansion, improvements, repairs to the sewer system. The funding source is new building activity, something called a system development fee, in addition to interest income on fund investments. So, any questions on any of those four funds? I kind of went through those quickly, but and then I'll just say in summary then that I think this budget is a thorough review of town expenses and conservative, but also I think reasonable estimates of revenue. I think it reflects the priorities that the town council established. Supports council's commitment to exceptional services to residents and visitors, and just is responsive to the overall needs of the town. I also want to thank every department head, every town employee that participated in this. It's a kind of involved process of getting all this together, so I appreciate everybody's time.
Nice job. Nice job, Ron.
Any questions that anybody would have on any of that?
Not a lot of questions because it reflects a ton of work. Craig has already been gone over in a lot of detail. We're not recognizing Craig Gilbert. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
I think it's great. One thing I didn't see is any grant income. Do we have any multi-year grants? Are we applying for grants? Or
well, we have applied for some grants, but if we haven't been awarded them, I can't budget for them.
Are there any applications out right now for grants?
There's one in progress, right?
There's a Claymore Management Trust Fund grant that's wrapping up in the next month, and we've applied for a CAMA grant to rehab one access and put ADA access.
There's also another grant, I think, through Duke Energy that hopefully will offset part of the cost of that town fuel tank. Okay. It was in relation to the storm damage or whatever. So,
grants are a double-edged sword, right? They're great, they're helpful, but they don't give you 100% of the money.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. So even when you get a grant, you have to participate at about a 25% level, depending on the value of the grant. So that comes out of general fund, generally, I believe.
Yeah, depending on what it is.
Yeah, depending on what it's for.
Typically, yes. Any other questions?
So you just need to set a public hearing, right? Make a motion we set a public,
And I guess also to accept the proposed budget and allow the town clerk to advertise it.
Oh, so that's what you need to do, Nancy? Make a motion we accept the budget as presented by the finance officer.
Second.
Okay, we have a proposal. And then a motion and a second. Any comments, gentlemen? Discussions, questions?
No.
I've been over this a lot.
Yeah.
And personally, we need this if we're going to maintain level of safety, protection, cleanliness, grow our funds, meet the requirements.
But also ask the rector.
You don't want it confused that you've adopted this budget. We need
correct.
To.
So do it the way you wrote, right? Well, okay. So I make a motion we direct the town clerk to advertise the proposed budget is available for inspection with a public hearing Monday, June 10th at 6 p.m. Can I change my motion, sir?
Second.
Yes. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Nick.
I guess I'll move on to the next item on the agenda.
Go right ahead.
As I mentioned, during the budget discussion was this project for replacing water meters and installing an automatic meter reading system. So we sent out the request for proposals to seven banks and got proposals back from three. And my recommendation is to accept what was the best proposal, which is from BB&T, of a 10-year loan at 2.78%. Okay. We would need the council to approve and adopt resolution 1806.
Make a motion we approve resolution R1906 or approved finance in terms of BB&T as presented.
Second.
All right. Any other questions? Now, the recovery for this is through. The recovery for this loan is through the rates?
Through the rates.
Right. I just want the people to realize where the recovery comes from.
That's the main driving force of the.
Right.
In addition to that, but also trying to build reserves a little bit so that for future capital projects like this, we have funds available and have to borrow.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? Okay, unanimous, Nancy. Thank you, Arlen.
Thank you, Arlen.
Thanks for the memo, too. It's quite detailed. Fire department?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Police department?
Nothing, sir.
Public works department?
Just a couple quick updates. Council approached me about a stormwater behind Sadler's here. I'm coming up with a, as you can see, I came up, I worked like 3.5 hours on this draw.
It shows.
So, yeah.
This is, as you can see, starting at 309, going down over to the Moxie lease land, over to the ditch there. I'm also coming up and got a price for the material. It was approximately almost $18,000 just the material, which is really not bad. It's like a 1,200-foot project. Public Works is looking into actually taking this task on itself, so it's going to save quite a bit of money that way. Also, the projects down on General Whiting and Ocean View has come almost come to an end. They're in the cleaning up process now. I have the Ava company also in town now doing stormwater, camera, cleaning, manhole rehabs. That'll be coming to an end probably Thursday of this week. So it's just basically an update to let you guys know what kind of projects have been going on and what's finishing up and what's going to begin.
Well, that's good work getting a lot of that ready for storm season, basically.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so good work. Right. Now, so this work, this $18,000, though, Nancy, would that be, could we use that as in-kind payment? Is that one of the areas?
I'm still waiting to hear.
Okay, but it is one of them we offered as in-kind?
We need to get permission.
Yeah, we've got to get permission from the
okay.
So we can't start this yet. The question is, how formal a drawing do they need for permission?
They're going to need something more formal.
They need to tell us. Well, I mean, the question is to pay.
She's waiting for a response from their representative.
You're going to have to submit exactly where you, how many feet, what it's going to be impacting, what the trees are going to have to come down, what you're going to put in the ground.
Sure. And this is just heading from halfway down Settlers, the south part of it.
I'm assuming we're going to have an injury, a stamp
call. That's my next question. Do I need to go ahead and proceed? Find an engineer to engineer this project?
Well, that's my question is, there's no reason to pay an engineer unless we have to. So if Sunny Point requires it, if Sunny Point does a requirement, this is a very standard
simple project.
Stormwater drop, right? So all he's got to get is 2 inches per 100 feet?
Yes, sir.
So you go to the ditch and you measure 1,200 feet and you know how deep you start. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And so My input is we just need Sunny Point to tell us exactly what they need, because I don't want to spend town's money for an engineering drawing if it's not required. Because an engineer will charge them $1,000 to seal a drawing for that. And while I know you guys are laughing at this drawing, that drawing's perfectly good to do the work out of, right? Because it's a simple...
Jimmy, I would be more concerned about, you know, the sizing of the pipe being adequate for the amount of area we're trying to cover.
First council was talking about a 6-inch pipe, and I've been dealing with a lot of pipes right here. I've actually went up, I've installed an 15-inch pipe on this project.
Yes, that's my big concern.
Care of this project.
Yeah, you have something that's going to accept the water.
And that's really based... And Jimmy schooled me on this, by the way, so I was the one that said 6-inch would be fine, so not Jimmy. But he based it off of the intakes that he's got, right? So the number he's got drawn in there, that's where he got to his 15-inch pipe, off what the openings are. And that's exactly how he's
doing. I would just make sure through our engineer that he's comfortable with the size piping without going into doing a stamp drawing, if that's what they require, whatever Sunny Point requires of them, just make sure we've got the right size pipe to carry the amount of water we're trying to carry. That's all I have to ask.
And there's one more thing I need Council's got its own, is the stormwater assessment that you guys brought up to me. And I sent out an email, and I got a response from our engineer, and I just need you guys to move on with it or try to look for another firm.
Yeah, so if you saw his response, the issue that a number of council had brought up to me, which I passed on to Jimmy, was Brian Cox's firm. There was belief he had done a lot of stormwater work in the neighborhoods that were concerned about. There's only one project that wasn't in the concerning area that their firm's done. That's what was in the email. So Jimmy's asking, can he get a quote from Brian Cox, or do we need him to find another firm to give us quotes for this stormwater assessment?
My take is that we pretty much put that to rest, that he didn't do at all.
Right.
And Brian's a professional engineer.
Right.
But we did address that concern, so I'm fine with moving forward with that. Okay. He's our engineer of record.
Good.
He also knows quite a bit about the town already.
Yes, sir.
Right? Even from Ocean Dunes all the way to the other end. So I'm comfortable with going with him.
Okay.
So we need to get a quote so all we can bring back to council.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jimmy.
All right.
Thanks, Jimmy. Recreation?
Nothing, sir.
All right. Discussion and consideration of old business. Final plat approval for the Cove at Curie Beach.
They look like they're struggling hard.
Yeah.
Before you see the final plat recommendation and approval from Town Council for the Cove at Curie Beach, this is Forest Hill Drayton Post property. I just went through the review for final approval with planning and zoning 2 weeks ago, and planning and zoning approved it. I've been through the ordinance, I believe the intent and letter of the law and the ordinances have been followed. They have procured the stormwater permit, and they have installed the improvements as required. I believe Jimmy's been involved with a lot of that process, and those are completed, and they are ready for construction. That's really all I have for you guys, unless you've got questions for me. The developer and the engineer are in the room. Have any questions for them?
Okay. And any concerns from your perspective, John, that we should be aware of?
I have one concern. In units 1 through 9, the initial stages of planning, because of its proximity to the road, they have almost no driveway in front of those units. As I said, at the initial talks about this development, I was informed that both carports, which would be required parking, would be open air. I'm under the assumption now that one of those carports would be an enclosed garage. That is concerning to me. For the main reason is that there is no driveway space in front of those units. And a lot of times what happens with the garage is that it becomes the owner's storage space and it is never used for parking. And I foresee a problem in the future there.
Is that is against a certain ordinance?
They are providing their required parking, yes, sir. I guess what I'm saying is initially it was supposed to be open air and now it's turned into an enclosed garage space.
In one unit or all units, 1 to 9?
All units, 1 through 9.
Can't become bedrooms, can they? They can't become bedrooms, can they?
No.
Just asking.
Well, I have some concerns that it's against what we were told in the preliminary plat.
I think we always plan to have that in the garage, one garage and one open air. We didn't change the plan.
Well, there was that plan originally, but that was part of our early discussions.
Yeah, I mean, we may not have had a final floor plan at that time. But we do have some overflow parking, and I would say the garage is extra deep, so there's room for some storage of beach stuff in the garage, and there's also a large storage closet on the units.
The dimensions provided in the plan were 12 by 20, so it actually meets the minimum size as far as depth.
I don't have the floor plans with me, but the ones like we did at CVS, the same garage, and those were pretty deep. I think they were worth 20.
You might be jumping the area where the HVAC systems and water meter is.
Yeah, there's some of that kind of thing. But we do have a large storage closet on the floor for each storage chair.
What about a beach access?
Anyway, I'll see what happens to garages all the time, especially when they're turned into weekly rentals. So parking's already a premium for that development.
Any beach access ever come to agreement with any of the other people to use their beach accesses?
Not privy to any agreements, okay. Sir.
Well, I mean, there's public beach access is the same between ours, right?
Wow.
Between E and F. I mean, their distance to a public beach access is the same as halfway between E and F.
I think there's one a quarter mile each direction.
Right. Okay. Yes, it's the same.
Okay. Do you have a recommendation, John?
Yeah, B&Z recommendation.
All right, what's the P&Z recommendation? Is accepted?
P&Z recommended approval. Final plat. Yes, sir.
Any questions for John? Any questions for the developer? He's here.
I'll make a motion where you approve the final plat.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion or questions? All right. I believe you're recusing yourself.
I have to recuse myself.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All against?
No.
Okay. It passes. Plat's approved. Okay, let's see.
Revision site?
Yeah. Going to consideration for new business. Review and approval of the 2019 EOC plan.
Request to
sure.
Go from donor?
Yep.
Sorry, plug in. Oh, you should have had a plug in. I knew there was. Maybe. Oh, I got you. Hold on. Sorry. Give me 1 second. And this will be cut. So, got inputs from. I said it's bro. Hey, I'm not going to do it that way. Never mind, I'll just stop. So, got inputs from the department heads on the emergency operations plan.
Sorry.
I was going to pull it up. The inputs were very specific and targeted around a couple of the sections. Appreciate the fire chief and the police chief. We will make the changes, but the biggest part of them are around how we deal with issuing red stickers before the storm. And then how we plan for food and gas and water. The gas issue is being addressed in our budget with a tank, which will have diesel and gasoline. We're pursuing a grant to get that. We will still make sure and have agreements with the owner of the store until we get that, in case we have an early season storm, because it'll probably be a little while before we actually have that tank. And then around food and other issues, our current plan assigns that to each of the department heads. We'll get back together and look at, is that the best way to do that now that we have this complex? There were some concerns around that, so I'll talk with the department heads. But the key parts of the plan that I want to make sure and highlight to council is our responsibilities with the EOC The reason I haven't sent this out to you guys yet is we had the hurricane exercise with the EOC in New Hanover County last week. So I went one day, Ed Kennedy went one day, Mike sent Paul Hubbard for two of the days. So we got a lot of good information from there. One of the issues there is they are limited on space because of the problems they're having. And as council's pretty aware from last year, we didn't even send someone up there. We worked from the phone with them, which was a lot better for us with our limited staffing. So we may not send someone up there, and that may be just fine. So we'll fix that in our plan. As far as the actual matrix on how we recommend evacuations and curfews and water system isolations of building sites and electricity and debris, all the department heads agreed that they still believe that's the right way for us to do. So basically minimal changes, I'll send them out to you. I'd like to hold off, and we'll approve this at the June meeting, but we'll be operating under it if we have a June storm. So if council's okay with that, that's what I'm looking for.
Sure.
And sorry I couldn't show it up line. I'll eventually have a computer that'll plug in.
There's already a storm brewing it.
Yeah, right now. There's always a storm brewing. But anyway, so the Emergency Operations Center, Emergency Operation Plan, the inputs from the department heads were small but significant in how we actually deal with taking care of our employees. We've already talked about the radio system that we're going to upgrade. Appreciate your support of that. So we're going to upgrade the Public Works Department radio system and buy some extra radios. Great job by Ed and Mike for evaluating multiple options and finding the cost-effective one for us. So communications and fuel were our two biggest issues, and not having a good building. We fixed the building issue. We're looking at fixing the fuel issue in our budget. We're already moving forward to fix the communication issue. So those are the three issues. Second to this, I'd like to request the council approval for having our hurricane meetings on the night of June 3rd, which is a Monday night, and sometime early day June 8th or 10th, whichever one the Saturday is. I have to look at my calendar now so that I can work with Nancy to get that advertised. So June 3rd is the Monday.
8th, June 8th.
June 8th is the Saturday. And so June 3rd at 5 p.m. so people can get home. And then June 8th at 11 a.m. So that way people that can't get there on a work night can get there on a weekend night. Nancy's already reported that this room's available both of those times, so as long as council's okay with that, we'll get it advertised. Do I need a motion for that, Nancy, or just?
No.
No. So consensus from council if you guys
Yeah, let's do it.
If it fits your schedule.
Is June 3rd at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m.?
5 p.m. So I'm going to the fire meeting that night.
So you have to come Saturday.
Yeah. And then Saturday at 11 a.m. Nancy. June 3rd, 5. June 8th, 11 a.m. There you go.
Okay.
That's all I have for the Emergency Operations Center.
All right. Resolution 19-05 regarding House Bill 971, privatizing North Carolina ABC. We received a resolution from the League. Thank you, Nancy. I was looking to you to help me out there. We received a resolution from the League, and this has to do with the allowing, getting rid of our ABC stores, getting rid of our ABC stores and inventory, and basically allowing private people to, or private businesses to sell liquor. And what that would do is it would significantly impact us from probably two perspectives. One is there would be more places to buy alcohol. Second, we would have a loss of revenue that comes to each of the towns that is shared by the ABC boards. So the resolution is quite detailed. It's two pages long. Hopefully you have had the opportunity to read it so that we can determine if you would like to support that resolution. If you support it, I will then sign it. But it is a resolution against the bill, keeping the ABC structure in place. It is up there.
I make a motion to support the resolution to continue proper funding for our town from the ABC sales.
How much do we make off of it?
As much funding as possible.
About
20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Or I could buy Knob Creek at CVS.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'll That's the choices.
Very okay. Easy in California.
Any questions along this line, gentlemen? You've had a chance to read
yes,
it, so.
I don't agree with all the assumptions. I tried to do some study on why the people brought it forward, what was their reasoning, which I couldn't find much.
You won't.
I've read through all these things that says why this is mm-hmm. a much better idea to keep it this way than to privatize it. One of them, was it in the, yeah, whereas more than $7 billion are spent by the state of North Carolina on having excessive alcohol. Gracious, I can't imagine it significantly going up because there's more hours or more stores. They almost defeat their purpose throwing that number, and then they say we're one of the lowest states in consumption there is, and one of the lowest states that has an alcohol problem.
But yeah, we're
the county that has the highest consumption.
Yeah, yeah. We're the 44th state.
I'm not opposed to we agreeing to support it and sign it. I think some of their statistics are fallacious.
Well, that's fair. We can go through and reduce some of them or take a look at them in a little more detail and come back and send out a revised resolution for council to take a look at.
Oh, I don't
Is that what you want?
We got a motion.
Okay.
You've got
All right.
We got a motion and a second.
All right. So we got a motion and a second. Any other questions? We're in discussion.
No, I'm good with it.
All right. No, gentlemen? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All against? All right. It was easy enough.
What happened to the free market?
Oh, free market's good.
I've already said my note for the evening, John.
There you go. He says
I'm sure I'll hear about it.
You're allowed to have other notes. We've got one more.
Yep. Carolina Beach, Curie Beach Sewer Authority adoption of rates.
Right. I assume she put it up, but so we had a sewer authority meeting on May 13th. Arlen, myself, Jimmy, and Joe all went to the meeting representing Curie Beach. Joe and I are the former commissioners on that board. We reviewed the spending for the previous year. So the way the rate works is after Carolina Beach closes their books and have their audit, then that information is rolled in and we catch back up money. So that's why either they give us a lot of money or we give them a little bit of money. That's how it's worked, at least in the past few times. This year, their expenses were higher than projected. Part of that was, if you think about it, that was all due to a year ago because their books closed in June 30th of 2018. So the expenses we're talking about were from 2017-2018, not due to the hurricane, contrary to what people mm-hmm. sometimes think. The rates do increase, and when that happens, we basically apply those rates retroactively to the 2017-2018. And so the rates went from $0.7254 per 1,000 gallons to $1.1247 per gallon. That's the variable rate. And the fixed cost went from $12,234.87 per month to $14,352.78 per month. And then capital recovery, which is upgrading the sewer systems in the plant, not Carolina Beach, but just the plant itself, mm-hmm. Went from $4,897.17 per month to $5,097.74 per month. When you apply that to the time for the fixed and capital recovery and then to the gallonage for the variable cost, make a motion that we accept the rates I just stated, and when we do that, that will mean Arlen will get to write a $58,253.89 check to Carolina Beach, and then we'll start using the rates that we just approved.
Second.
So that's my motion to approve the three rates I mentioned. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, any other questions? Any other questions for...
And great job by Arlen and Jimmy on the discussions. I mean, it's great having the two technical people there when we're in the room talking with the sewer authority.
So, at the same token, we still divert as much as possible.
Exactly right. So right. We are balancing. The real issue that helped Carolina Beach out is they all those big projects that they did in 2016, 17, and early 18 are starting to show up on their side. We're showing up on our side with the big project we did. So our usage, everybody's usage went down, which is good.
But it makes the per rate usage
Yeah, but
up
it keeps the fixed cost not moving as much as we had hoped. So we'd be in a lot more trouble if we wouldn't have done that.
Right. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? All right. Mayor has no additional updates. Any other commissioner items?
No, sir.
Just for the council, I sent you the letter. If you could get me back any thoughts on that for that we sent out at the beginning of hurricane season. If you have anything you want to add or change, if you could get that to me. I'll work with Nancy to get that sent out in the next week or so.
That's quite good.
It's very, very similar to last year's. I just added a couple things to remind people that while Hurricane Florence sounded really bad, it wasn't really bad, and we shouldn't let it change our minds on how we do plans. So that's all
okay.
I have.
Okay. Nancy and I attended the final policy meeting for MOTSU last Tuesday. We will be having the plan is available online now if you want to view it. What's the website? Capefear.org, Capefear.
It was in the email that you get sent out.
Council of Governments, yeah. Sorry about that. And the final draft is there. It is open for public comment at this time. If you want to comment, I think they're going to forward any comments specific to something from Carolina Beach. They will forward it out to us. And then we will have the final meeting at our town hall June the 24th for acceptance. And then,
what day of the week is the 24th?
I believe it is a Monday.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, the 24th at 6 p.m.
Monday? Good.
Okay.
I have one thing.
There's a lot of good work on that Matsu thing. So, Joe, please stay with it, man. It looks like it's finally going to come home, get the things we need.
Hopefully.
Mayor, we wrapped up the dedication last weekend. Thank you for your support and all the members of the team here. And all the members of the community and the staff and everybody that participated, I had a great time. I had a great committee to work with. We were way under budget. The council authorized the dedication committee about $3,200. I think they spent about $1,000. I don't have final numbers, but I thought it went well. Hope everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah, the... our suppliers downtown came through as usual, and so did our administrative department. So, very good. All right, I need a motion for closed session, gentlemen.
Take a motion to go in closed session.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're in the restroom while y'all do that. Yeah, there you go.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We turn from closed session.
And,
do I have a motion?
Yes. As the council discussed, we make a motion that we approve directing the town clerk to enter into a contract with a safety assessment professional to do a risk management safety standard and policy analysis of the town.
Second. I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. May I have a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just see if there's any questions.
I'm going home.